Call me old man Waves.
Damn you, old man!
Wait.
Old ass man.
Shut up, old man. You smell like fart.
No. Man.
Old man.
Wait. He's so old, he got a podcast on cassette.
Fuck, you're old.
Wade. And welcome to the Old Man Wade Show. I am your host, the God of Stubborn, the Lord of Laughter, Old Man Wade. And we got a returning guest, a favorite. Why don't you state your name and where you're from?
My name is Steve Van Samson. I am from the planet Earth with all the other human-based life forms. Also known as Lancaster, Massachusetts. I mean, if you really need to be that specific. I'll be that specific. I mean, what's up, everyone? I write horror books, and I'm a guy.
I mean, are you really from planet Earth, though?
What's that?
Are you really from planet Earth, though?
I mean, look, as far as I know, I mean, I'm pretty sure, I have my suspicions that perhaps the shed has something in it, like, underneath the shed, and maybe, you know, there's a spacecraft down there, but, like, I've never had the balls to actually dig it up, so.
Don't worry, one day you'll be chilling, doing nothing, and this alien language will call to you. And you walk over and go, what is that? And you'll find out you have superpowers.
You say that with such confidence that it's making me think like you know something I don't know.
Of course not. Why would I do anything like that? He's discovered.
Shit.
God damn it. Speaking of which, did you like that movie?
Which one? Man of Steel?
Brightburn.
Oh, I actually didn't see it.
Really? I shouldn't be shocked because it's not really something that people would be running out to go see.
Well, you know, it's funny. I actually love James Gunn. I think at this point James Gunn's super popular because of Guardians, but like, I loved him since this movie called Slither. I don't know if you know that movie at all, but it actually starred Nathan Fillion, and it was like early 2000s or something, and it's just this bizarre, hilarious, over-the-top, like, old monster movie, alien monster movie. This alien falls to Earth, and there's, like, slugs, and they invade people's brains, and it's just awesome. Michael Rooker is the bad guy in it, and it's this really, really fun movie, and I love that movie. And so ever since Slither, I was, like, really always following James Gunn. And actually, I got to see James Gunn live because he had a movie called Super. Do you know that movie?
Was that the one with Dwight Schrute from The Office?
Yes.
It sounds squishy!
Yeah. And Ellen Page and Kevin Bacon's in it and Liv Tyler's in it. And it's just such a weird friggin' movie, but I love it. And it kind of came, like, out right after Kick-Ass, and it was sort of like the same idea of what would happen if a real person went out and tried to be a superhero with no superpowers and everything was super violent and everything. But anyway, I got to see, me and my wife saw a showing of that when it was, like, kind of playing some, like, festival circuits. And we saw in Boston, and James Gunn was actually there. And it's really, really funny because this was before Guardians, obviously. It was a couple years before Guardians, or 3 years maybe. And, like, it really felt like James Gunn was kind of winding down. Like, he was talking about, you know, what a difference it was making Super versus Slither, because Slither was, like, to him, so big budget. And it had all these trailers, and it had all these sets, and it had all this stuff. And you know, Super was just, like, you know, essentially back to his, like, Truman roots almost. Like, it was just nothing. And, it's just really funny because a few years later he became James freaking Gunn with Guardians. But anyway, so my point is, I guess, I don't know. I am a fan and I would like to see it, but I just didn't get to.
It's funny, so I went to go Google the movie because I felt like I'd seen it, but I haven't. And I was like, is that Elizabeth Banks?
So James got working with the same people.
Yeah.
He loves, you know, he's always got Michael Rooker. He also tries to fit Nathan Fillion and stuff, and that's from Slither. Elizabeth Banks was also in Slither. So that doesn't surprise me. You know, when I saw that she was going to be in this, it's like, ah, cool. You know, he's gone back to one of his alums.
Yeah. And I'm looking at his IMDb now, and I'm like, yeah. And it's funny, because Nathan Fillion was actually in the first Guardians of the Galaxy.
when he did a mocap thing. He's like one of the prisoners. You just can't tell it's him.
Yeah, it's freaking hysterical. But who doesn't love Nathan Fillion, though? Like, I would...
I know.
I'm actually kind of disappointed we won't be getting
his... His fingers up his nose.
What did you say?
He, like, puts his fingers up the prisoner's nose and, like, his fingers, like, worm into the guy's brain. So that's the character that Nathan Fillion played. It's just this, like, random prisoner guy.
Of course he does. I'm kind of disappointed he's not going to be, what's his name? Nathan Drake in the Uncharted movies, if those ever get done anyway.
Yeah, I mean, that's like, everybody wanted that like 10 years ago. I don't know, at this point, is he too old? I don't know, who knows. Yeah. But yeah, I don't know, I feel like there's probably not going to get made. But, hey, you know, whatevs.
Yeah, but enough of that. Let's talk about you, man. You just finished the book.
I did. I finished a book, but it's not. It's still moldy clay form on my computer. But you know, it does feel good to finish a book. If anybody's out there and you know you're thinking about writing or you've started and you know you can't seem to finish, my advice is to just push through if as much as possible if you can, like, because it's one thing to doubt yourself, even if it's like every single day as you're doing this, I don't know if this is good enough. I don't know if this is good enough, and that's okay. And I would say that's from a lot of people, because I'm not that experienced, but a lot of people I've talked to who have been writing professionally for years, they say, you know, that's very normal. It's okay. Like you're gonna wonder all the time if you're good enough, whatever. But the problem is, if you let that little voice stop you, you can't let it win. You can let it check you, and that's good, because you don't want to become you're too cocky, or you don't want hubris to take over to the point where you think like, oh, I'm so great, I'm doing all this fantastic stuff. It's like, you know, there's a point where you start I don't feel that way. I mean, I think maybe people could feel that way. But it's good to have that little check, but just don't let it win, push through, just finish it. And I think it's better to move on to the next thing and just finish it and realize that the previous thing you just finished wasn't perfect. And instead of trying to make it perfect for, 10 years, 20 years or something, like I know people who, I mean, I'm good friends with this wonderful writer, Tom Deedy. This guy is awesome. He's won a Bram Stoker Award for the novel Haven. He's really a great guy. It took him, I think he said, and he can punch me in the face if I'm wrong. I think he said it took him like 9 years or more to write that book. He had it in his head forever, but then he won the Stoker. So. And for those who don't know, the Bram Stoker Awards are essentially like winning an Oscar for horror writing. That's the biggest award that you can win. So, and he's from Holliston. He's a great guy. So, like, I mean, that's insanely awesome. You know, he finally got that finished, and it got, he beat it up to the point where he was happy, and hey, it won a Stoker. But I think that after that, he started pumping his stuff out, and that's awesome. So once he got that to that point, and he's like, oh my god, like that felt so good. That was finished. Now we gotta start like picking up the pace a little bit and start finishing. Get to more of the ends. It really that first one is the hardest though. It really is. But I think that it's awesome. It's an awesome feeling. So yeah. So my third book right now is it's kind of separate from my first two, which I've talked about on the show before. Bone Eater King and Marrow Dust are like African vampire post-apocalyptic horror stories, and this one is a novel, and it's actually longer than the other two were. This one's about it's just under 100,000 words right now, and that's a first draft though, so we're not done with it. But it's different. It's more like a fantasy thing, so it's totally separate, and I wanted to do like dark, scary fantasy that was like pretty violent with monsters and stuff, so it's kind of like low fantasy. I had fun writing it, and I'm telling you, man, every single time I sit down with this, You know, it's like I run the gamut of emotions of, hey, this is pretty good. Maybe this whole thing's worthless. Like, that all happens, like, in this, like, every single time you sit down. It just is kind of how it is. But, you know, you do build some confidence. And so at this point, say this is actually the fifth book I've written. The first two I wrote are, like, just sitting on a shelf. I'm not sure what to do with. You do start to get a little bit more confident, but that voice never goes away. At least for me, and I know a lot of people who say that too, that they're always questioning whether or not it's worth it, whether or not they have any right to be doing this, but yet they just keep going. And eventually you kind of, I think, learn to not shut that voice up, but to just sort of ignore it a little bit and be like, well, yeah, maybe it's not worth it. I'll make the next thing better then. You know, make whatever you're working on as good as you can, but just realize that no amount of beating it up is ever going to make it perfect. And eventually you start to look like, you know, Rocky, because, you know, eventually the beating up, like, starts to hurt it. Like, you know, if you beat it up too much, it was got an eye swollen shut and, you know, all this stuff.
I didn't hear no bell. But no, but I dig it though, man. Like I work on projects, and even with the podcast, like, sometimes I'm like, fuck, this just isn't good enough. And, like, I get discouraged. Possibly, let's see, we have 7 days off the week. 9 days off the week, I get discouraged with all of my projects. But what's funny, about it is once I set up the laptop, set up the microphone, and I get myself situated, like, all that, it's funny, all that doubt disappears. Or when I'm writing, when I'm writing an article or whatever, I start writing, and it's like everything else kind of just goes away. All my insecurities, all of my self-doubt. Once I'm actually in the process of being creative, everything just disappears, and I kind of just, I vibe with it. But you're right. That voice of self-doubt never really actually leaves.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you get in the zone, for sure. I mean, like anything, you know, and when you're in that zone, it's like you're just going. You're just creating, like you said. And that is really the best possible feeling. I think that's kind of like the best of it all, is when you can get to that point and you're in the zone and you're like, just, you, like, time goes by, you don't realize how much time is going by, you know, you look up and it's like, holy crap, I wrote all those words, and holy crap, you know, all these hours have come by and I didn't even realize it. That's great. Like, that's like magic time, you know, but it can't always be like that. You know, you're going to have your days.
Oh, yeah.
Frustrated and just, like, stare at the keyboard, but, you know, but hopefully those get less and less, but who knows.
But you're right, though, like, especially, like, when you write yourself into a wall and you're like, well, fuck, I have no idea what I'm going to put next. And for me, when I get like that, I kind of just, I go, you know what, I'm going to skip ahead to about maybe another chapter and I'll come back to this later. And then when I come back to it, I go, okay, now that I have written what's ahead of it, I know what to do going forward. So for me, that helps. But how do you deal with it? Like, if you ever write yourself into a corner or anything like that?
So actually, I have a really appropriate answer. In writing my second vampire book, Marrow Dust, there, I wrote about, I don't know, 15,000 words or something. Like, it was a decent amount. It wasn't nothing of the beginning. And the very opening chapter of that book is this, like, weird, bizarre dream sequence, because it is a sequel, and I wanted to start in a really disorienting way that, like, sort of harkened back to the first book, but would put you in a spot where you kind of weren't sure how long after the first one this was taking place, but there's, like, this moment of this dream. So the dream I liked. Okay, so I'm like, okay, chapter one's fine, because it's kind of disconnected. But then after that, there was this whole thing. And the character, like, starts off on this mountain in Kenya. And it was like, I'm writing, and it ended up being, like, three chapters worth. And I was still on this damn mountain. And so I'm reading it, and I'm thinking about it, and I'm like, okay, I am bored. I'm bored with this. I think that I should have wrapped this up sooner. I don't think I should be starting chapter four still on the mountain. I think that something has has gone wrong. And so I, you know, and this is not necessarily what I've heard from a lot of, you know, professional writers. A lot of people will say, write, go forward, don't look back. That's what they say. They say, save the editing for the second draft and just book it to the finish line. And that's how you finish books. And when I experienced this, I had heard that. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, no, I guess I should just keep going. And I really wrestled with it for a long time. And I ended up taking about 5,000 words out of what I had written.
Really?
Which is like a short story. I mean, most short stories in anthologies, like if you look at, if you're writing for open calls and stuff from different anthologies, most ask for about like 4,000 to 6,000 or 7,000 max words. So if you have a 5,000 word piece, that's a good solid short story. So I ripped that out. And so I kept the dream part and I kept the beginning of what came next. And then I was like, okay, two or so chapters about, I just delete it. And I always save them aside just in case. But I took it out of the main file. And, yeah, I was like, you know, even though people say don't look back, don't edit until you're done, and the reason why people say that, to be fair, is because it is kind of a trap. So if you're doing too much editing as you're going, it does sort of slow you down to the point where you're making no progress or virtually no progress. And, you know, you do need to get to the end and then make your changes. But my argument at that particular moment, because I did feel like I wrote myself into a corner. I'm like, I don't like where I'm at in this. I'm 5,000 words past where I was interested, and like to what even comes next, I'm not even sure. And all this stuff, there was like so much doubt. I was like, well, if I continued with this, it would be like a tangent universe. It's not like I could do what you just said and go back and fix it later, knowing what comes next later or something, figuring out that part. Because that, if I, looking back at it now, if I hadn't changed it at the beginning, it would have been a different book. It would have been like an entirely different book. Because my plans for what would have followed those extra two chapters that I took out were completely different, completely, utterly, totally, totally different than what I ended up doing. And I couldn't see it at that point. I had to remove those and rethink it and be like, all right, well, since I didn't like being on the mountain for so long, you know, I gotta take out all this stuff. So now I gotta figure out a new way of getting them off the mountain quicker and making it more interesting and having like a more, you know, explosive thing happen that's, you know, this exciting, interesting thing or whatever. So that's what happened to me. So for Marrow Dust, I definitely painted myself into a corner, but I just went against the grain and said, you know, I know all these, you know, writers who I respect and they've been doing it forever. They all say don't do this, but you also got to do what's right for you. You know, you have to just kind of feel it out. And that was right for me at that particular time. So that's how I handled that anyway.
Well, it kind of makes sense, but it's always one of those things where you have to take everyone's information with a, you know, not necessarily with a grain of salt, but just because it doesn't work for you now doesn't necessarily mean it won't work for you later, or taking bits and pieces of everything that's going on and actually making it a thing. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I've one of my favorite movies is Finding Forrester. And one of the
things... You're the man now, dog.
You're the man now, dog. But, You're the man now, dog. Punch the damn keys! But one of my favorite parts of that movie where he was talking about the process of writing, he goes, the first draft you write with your heart, and then the second one you do with your mind. And it kind of made sense, because the first time, like, I start writing something, I'm like, I got all this passion in it, and I'm like, yeah, I got this. But then when I go back and read it again, I'm like, this makes sense, but I definitely need to reword that and go to thesaurus.com and stop using this word this many times.
Yeah.
And let me tell you, that is thesaurus.com has become like my best friend over the last like few months.
I use it all the time. I mean, I wrote, you know, song lyrics for years, and I would always go to thesaurus.com, you know. You can also go to rhymezone.com if you write lyrics. That was my best friend as well.
Rhymezone?
Rhymezone. It just tells you what words rhyme with the word. You type in, you know, rambunctious, and it'll tell you if there's any word that rhymes with rambunctious. Or, you know.
It's just of all the words you could have come up with, rambunctious.
Probably not too many, but like sun, it'll be like fun, gun, you know, all whatever.
I dig it, though. But hey, let's, on top of the books, plural, Marrow Dust and The Bone Eater King, actually, The Bone Eater King and then Marrow Dust, which are both available on Amazon.com, if I'm not mistaken.
That is very true. And they will officially, and I believe we announced this last time we were on, because I work with Rough House Publishing, I should mention that too. And we did have an episode with you, I think, in July, and we were both on Derek Rook and myself.
The Rook Master Rough House.
And we are going to be re-releasing my first two books. They're going to be Rough House editions that are going to be super deluxe hardcover with illustrations and a bunch of extras. So we're going to give them the full Rough House treatment, because that's kind of our thing, where we love to give people extras with the book itself, and that's usually comic books. But these are going to be the first foray into prose work. So we're going to start off with re-releasing my books, and there's going to be some more stuff to come, but some more original stuff. I'm not going to talk about that, but there is going to be, should be out by next June, the deluxe edition of Bone Eater King, which I think we might be calling the Apex edition. That's what we were kind of throwing around.
I like that. Apex edition is dope. I like the way that sounds.
Cool, because it's like, well, the Apex Predator, right? And it's, yep, Predator World is the series, so. Anyway.
Yeah.
So that's super excited about. That's going to be freaking amazing, and it'll be really, really cool to see these things get, like, some new life, some new blood pumped into these things. Because I put out The Bone Eater King in 2017, and I haven't really come out with anything significant since. I've had some short stories appear in collections, but I've just been working on this third book for like almost 2 years. So I don't know.
But speaking of like your books and stuff like that, you'll be at Rock and Shock, October 12th through 13th.
So actually, Rock and Shock, yes, I'm going to be there the 11th as well. So the show actually runs 11th, 12th, and 13th of October, and that's in Worcester, Mass. at the DCU Center. And this is my favorite con that I've ever done. I love Rock and Shock. It was the first con I ever did. I did it for 2 years with the New England Horror Writers, with my buddies over there, and they let me cut my teeth on the con scene, and I really, really loved it. And this year, 2019, I have now gotten to do one con with Derek Rook of Rough House, and at the Rough House Publishing booth, and I'm going to do it for a second time here, and that's really exciting. Really, really stoked to do that. I had a really good time with Derek last time. And actually, Rock and Shock is going to be awesome, but also, and there's like an incredible amount of guests that are going this year too, because Rock and Shock kind of looked like it was done. I gotta be honest.
Really?
They've been doing it for like 11 years or something, I think. And last year it was like half the size that it usually was. They cut it down, and the guest list wasn't quite as impressive. No offense to the guests who came out, obviously, but it all sort of felt a little bit like maybe this is winding down, and the scuttlebutt wasn't great and all this stuff, and then all of a sudden they come back this year, and it's a full-size convention, and they have, amongst other people, they have Bruce Campbell is going to be there, and Bruce Campbell of the Evil Dead fame, and you know, he just did Ash vs. Evil Dead, which was like the revival show that was like a sequel to the Evil Dead movies, and he's in Burn Notice for like 7 seasons, which is a top-rated show on USA for at least the first 5 years, I think it was on.
Yep.
But Bruce Campbell is awesome. He's also written 3 books, and he was in a great show in the early 90s. I loved Briscoe County Jr. I don't know if people remember that. It was like a cowboy show with like some sci-fi elements. And I love this guy. I've always loved this guy. He's like a geek god, like by far. And And he's going to be a Rock and Shock. It's just so crazy. So that's awesome. I actually got to meet him one time in the past, like for his first book tour. He came around and he was in Boston. But yeah, like a bunch of people from Twin Peaks are going to be there. And Kane Hodder is going to be there. And he was like one of the... He's kind of like the most beloved person to play Jason in the Friday the 13th movies. He wasn't the original, but he's a guy who kind of invented the slow breathing.
The slow breathing.
When Jason will just stand there and his shoulders rise and fall, and he's just breathing. Kane Hodder came up.
That's pretty damn cool. I never knew that. But again, I'm also a novice when it comes to a lot of like horror things. Like I know the classics and I know a lot of things, but like you actually, for you, this is a passion. So you study this stuff. You know you know more than just like the names of like the populars, like Robert Englund and Bela Lugosi. Like you know, like the like one of my favorites. I think you said was it was a woman who designed the Creature from the Black Lagoon.
So it's called The Lady from the Black Lagoon.
Oh, you go. Millicent Patrick? Does that make sense?
So Millicent Patrick is the woman, I guess. She's the special effects artist who came up with the costume and fabricated that costume. And it's just one of those things that, you know, if you're going back to the old days, because that's really where I sort of get passionate, is like the really, really old days of horror and stuff like that, like back to the 20s, 30s, 40s, whatever. You know, the Creature from the Black Lagoon is among the most iconic of movie monsters by far. And I don't think anybody would argue that point, but yeah, it is this weird thing where like, do you know this was done by a woman? That's not a typical role for a woman to have played, especially in the 40s. Cause that came out, that might've been the 50s, the Creature from the Black Lagoon, I think that might have been 51 or something like that, that movie. Because the other ones were all from the 30s. Like, Dracula and Frankenstein were both 31. Creature was actually 54. But still, in, you know, 54, this was not an industry that women were known for. Actually, going all the way back, Lon Chaney Sr., Lon Chaney Sr. was the guy who played Phantom of the Opera in the silent Phantom of the Opera, so it's kind of like the one that you think of where his nose is like, you know, like a pig nose, it's like an upturned nose, like that Phantom you can picture in your head that's black and white.
Yeah.
That's a silent movie, but that was from like 26 or something, or 28, and that, I think 26, but that was in a time when men almost exclusively, you know, were like, even, I mean, if you keep going back, men always played women. Like Shakespeare's day, there were no women actors. You know, men played the women all the time. So it's sort of like that old tradition even, where yeah, there were women, obviously, but in the 20s, but like, you know, acting. But like, Monster, like, he did all of that makeup himself. That was the tradition. That was like the old tradition. It was the stage tradition. Where people, if there was any makeup to put on, if you're, you know, if it's beauty makeup, if you're playing a woman, or if it's anything at all, if there's a scar or whatever, there were not makeup people. There was not a team of hair and makeup people. The actors actually put that on themselves. So that makeup where you can picture that ugly Phantom, he did that himself. And not only did he do it himself, he designed it and figured it out, and nobody even knew how he did it.
Damn.
It was just like a trade secret where he would do everything himself. So that was like still happening in the 20s. And then you had in the Universal cycle in the 30s, which contained like the Bela Lugosi Dracula, and you had, you know, the Boris Karloff Frankenstein and like all those. The makeup artist that is sort of historically remembered is Jack Pierce. And he was like Universal's guy. And he was the one who came up with the look for Dracula, the look for Frankenstein, and all that stuff. And even though Frankenstein didn't have all that much in terms of, like, you know, prosthetic makeup necessarily compared to what we see today, you know, it's kind of just simplistic. That was still a pretty big deal for the time, and it's also flawless. I mean, if you look at that Frankenstein, you cannot at all tell where makeup starts and ends. Like, it's just perfect. It, even though it's simple, it looks like he is that creature. So you know, Jack Pierce is remembered, like, by far. And then you have the creature from the Black Lagoon, it's like, yeah, nobody knows. Nobody remembers who did that. It ends up being, was it a talented makeup artist, it was a woman. That's huge, too. So, yeah, the lady from the Black Lagoon, that's what we said the title was.
Yeah.
Good stuff. And we should mention the author, too, which is Mallory O'Meara. Mallory O'Meara. I really want to read the book. I just haven't gotten around to it.
Well, you know, we're adults. You have chilling, and you're married. So, like, you know, in a full-time job. And on top of, like, your creative endeavors, which you have many. So, you know, kind of life kind of gets in the way and stuff like that. And, you know, that actually, the topic you're talking about, the, like, knowing the source material and knowing your craft and stuff like that, that also brings up a conversation we had maybe about 2 or 3 months ago about writing about cultures that aren't necessarily your own.
Yeah.
And because I remember we were talking about this, and actually, if you go back to one of the older episodes, your first appearance on the show, where we discussed you doing the vampires in Africa. Mm-hmm. And I love the fact that you actually did your due diligence to really look into the landscape of Africa, the culture and everything else. So it's not just like you, it wasn't like you were just, what's the word, you weren't culture vulturing. You know what I mean? For lack of a better term, because some people will take these... Go ahead.
I like that, culture vulture.
Yeah, it's... You're not one of... So, you know what I mean? Like, so when you're writing about something, you're not necessarily doing it to sell a buck. Like, you're also... Which, you know, everyone does it for, like, you know, obviously for monetary gain. But you're not actually just doing this because, like, you know, I'm going to steal from a culture because I know it sells. Which is an issue I have with a lot of comic books when, like, instead of actually creating new characters, you're like, oh, we'll just make this character black, we'll make this character gay, we'll make this character white. And it's just like, you could just create new characters. But back to the point at hand, like, we were having a discussion about this, and you had a question about it in general because you felt that, like, you didn't want to be offensive by writing about something.
Right. I think that for me, the line that I walked with those books is, especially the first one, is I'm not seeing anybody write this. I want to write vampires like nobody's ever seen. I want to do African vampires. I want to write black vampires. I don't want to have it be like, oh, it's set in Africa, but, you know, I have a white guy protagonist or whatever, because I'm a white guy, I have to write white guys, right? Like, no, I want it to be a book about Africa starring Africans, like it had to be. And so everybody's from there, and, you know, that was, like, the point. So, like, I had to learn a lot about the people there, and it really was this walking of this line of, well, I want to do this, I want to help representation, I'm all about that, but do I have any fucking right to do this? You know, because that was the voice in the back of my head. Are people going to say, I'm a fraud? I'm just, you know, doing it to, like you said, to be a culture vulture or whatever, to sell books or whatever. And so that was the voice in my head the whole time. So I said, no, I'm going to do it. I'm just going to do it. But I want to do it as right as I possibly can by learning as much as I can. So, like, I did a deep dive into the Maasai. That was, like, a big thing. Like, I knew I wanted one of the characters to be Maasai, and I learned a ton about their culture. I learned, the main character who, in the first book, who is Maasai, is, like, one of the things is you don't really learn his name. And he's like, an amnesiac. And he doesn't really remember, so... One of the other characters kind of makes up a name for him and kind of uses that, but it's sort of an insulting thing. And then partway, the other character realizes that he doesn't really deserve the mean name, and so you know, because he's sort of proven himself. So she starts calling him Morna instead, not Moron, but Moran, which is a Maasai word for warrior, and I learned about how, like, you know, their manhood rituals go, and basically how, you know, this is a nomadic tribal culture, and they, you know, for, you know, they're basically they're cattle farmers. They live out on the plains of, you know, Tanzania and various other countries. They roam, and they just, they herd these cattle, but they herd these cows. But, like, I mean, the thing is that their culture is very intrinsic with the lion, and for centuries, they battled the lion, because guess what? The lion eats their cows. So it became a thing where they're like, well, you know, to become a man, what you got to do is you got to go out there and you got to go kill yourself a lion by yourself. And if you come back having killed the lion, you're a friggin' celebrity. They have like a parade for you, and they're like, everybody's, you know, super excited, and you're like the celebrity of the day, and you become a moron. And I'm probably pronouncing it wrong, but it is spelled M-O-R-A-N. But, so, yeah, for years, this is what happened. But then, in a modern day, like, conservation is a thing. You can't just go around killing the lions, you know, whatever. And, you know, the government said, no, it's okay. It's, you know, just like it's okay for Inuits to go kill whales, because they've done it for centuries, and this is their food source. So it's okay for the Maasai to do this. But then I read the story. I just loved it so much. There were these two brothers, and they were these Maasai brothers, and they wanted to go to college. And the tribe was like, look, this is stupid. There's no reason for you to go to college. They're not going to teach you anything worthwhile. You know, everything you need to know is here in you know, with your people. You know, we teach you how to exist and be a part of the world and do all this stuff, but they're like, we want to do more, though. We want to do more. And so these two brothers, they went off, and they came back with degrees, and it turned out that the village was actually really proud of them. And so there was this whole thing where they're like, well, how about if we try to change the thinking, our tribal thinking about lions, because we can't keep killing them. There aren't that many lions left. We can't say every single time a boy becomes a man, he's got to go kill a lion. We've got to stop this. And so they actually became, there is a Maasai conservationist group for lions. And these two brothers, they said that one of the things that they proposed, are like, how about to become a man, there are other ways to do it. How about going to college is one of the ways you can do it. We are now men. We didn't go kill lions, but we went out and we did this great thing, and we bettered ourselves, and now we're men. So I just thought that was like the most amazing story, right? Like, it's just so incredible. So the two boys, they had, you know, their Maasai names are difficult, and that's one of the reasons why I struggled with what to name the character, because I wanted them to be Maasai, but I had a really hard time finding a bank of names. It didn't seem to be like, it sort of seems to be like a lot of them when they interact with Westerners or whatever, they kind of just adopt names. And, you know, I mean, I know a lot of people who come here will do that to America. You know, they'll just, you know, hey, just whatever, just call me Steve. It doesn't matter. Like, you're going to screw up my name, just call me Steve. It's fine.
Which is hilarious in itself, because we have, in the building that I work at, we have people, and they'll come in, they'll go, oh, hi, my name is, we'll just use Steve, for example. And I'm like, yeah. So I need to see your ID before I sign you in and all that. And I look their name up, and I won't see Steve. And they're like, oh, it's actually, and I look at their ID, and I look at them, and they go, yeah. I go, okay. And I've actually had the conversation with people, because it's disappointing that people won't even, like, I don't know, even make like something as like a general attempt, you know what I mean, to try to learn a person's name. Because if you're given a name and it's a name you've like grown up with, you assume that person, the people you talk to would at least kind of give a concerned effort of, hey, let me learn your name if I'm going to work with you for an X amount of time. And it's
yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and I do the best I can, and whenever I pronounce it, I always say to someone, I always say, my apologies if I butchered your name. And they'll, 90% of the time, they'll say to me, like, you know, thank you for at least giving the effort. And then also, every so often, I get it right. And they'll go, oh my God, you got it right. I'm like, oh, cool.
Well, there's that. So that's interesting. That's totally true. I mean, like, people don't even freaking try, you know. But there are certain people, and I personally know this woman. She is from China, and I don't even know what her real name is, but she goes by Emma. And her explanation was she can't stand to hear her name mispronounced. It's like it goes right through her. She hates it.
Yes.
So she says, just call me Emma. It's fine. She would rather go by a fake name than constantly hear her actual name butchered. And there was another guy that I met. He used to do IT for my day job where I work. And he was actually from Kenya. And his name was he went by Patrick, but that was not his name. And he told me his name like once, but I don't remember it. But his last name was Kanyefe. And no matter how hard I tried to say it correctly, he's like, oh, just stop talking. At first I thought it was like Kanyefe. And he's like, oh God, no. And he's like, Kanyefe. And I would try to say it, and he's like, no. And in my hearing, I'm saying it the same. Like, I yes. really was trying. He's like, Steve, just stop. Just stop.
You know what? It's funny, because I tell people right off the bat, like, they'll say something to me, and they'll go, oh, blah, 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 you know, X, Y, Z, and ABC, and I'm trying to learn their name, and I go, I apologize, I am very American. So, and I can understand that, too. It's like, you know, if the mispronunciation of your name is so disturbing that you're just like, call me this, then I understand that too. But like, yeah. It also comes down to like, you know, to bring everything back to the beginning, it's all about respect. If you want something, if you want to be called something, you should be called that. If, you know what I mean? And if they're like, hey, don't even give the effort, I appreciate what you're trying to do, but no, call me Emma. Then call the person Emma if that's what they want. Like, you know what I mean? You don't need to go out of your way to be like, well, no, I'm gonna learn your name. No, they want to be called Emma, so just call them fucking Emma. Like, that's, you know what I mean? Because like you said, I think I'm hearing it right in my head, but to them it might sound like nails on a chalkboard.
Exactly. That was clearly what was happening with this guy from Kenya. I mean, just he's like, no, don't stop, don't even try. That's pretty funny. But anyway, bringing it back to the end of that previous story. So these two Maasai dudes, one of them went by Jackson, and he was a big Michael Jackson fan, I guess. And so he went by Jackson, so in the book, in Bone Eater King, a little bit of a spoiler, but the final name you kind of get is not the character's real original Maasai name. You never kind of learn that, but the closest you get is what he went by, which is Jackson.
Yeah.
So that was a like little tribute to these two awesome dudes and stuff. But yeah, I mean, hey, I think that people shouldn't be afraid to right outside the archetype of what they fall into. Like, give me a break. No, I don't know why it doesn't happen more, but I do think it is happening more. But hey, you know, in the third book, I'm just working on now that I mentioned, you know, it's like fantasy, and so my main character, it's a fantasy world, so it's not Earth, but I made my main character a Native American guy. So there is no America, but I wanted, I don't know, again, just kind of searching for, like, what I could do for, you know, I'm like, well, you know, how can I help this very typically white sort of cast? Because, you know, just like horror, you know, fantasy is one of those genres, but it is coming around. There's a lot of stuff, and I mean, that, you know, I don't know if you've heard of this Children of Blood and Bone book that had come out last year. It's getting a movie and everything, and I mean, this woman wrote this. It's her first novel. It hit big, and it is sort of, from my wife's read it. I haven't read it, but she said it was amazing. She loved it, and she's not like a big fantasy reader, but I guess It's sort of, kind of Black Panther-ish a little bit, like, with the fact that it takes place in Africa, but it also has this, like, I don't know, what people say, like, Afropunk, or I don't know if that's even right for this particular thing, but it's, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm looking at it, I'm looking at the image, the art of it right now, and the cover art looks amazing.
What's the author's name?
Here we go, I'm gonna butcher it, just to give you a heads up. excuse me. Tomi Adeyemi, Adeyemi. First name Tomi, Tomi.
So there you go. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely more and more. And I love all these groups that I am seeing about, like, you know, I think there's a group on Facebook, Black Girls in Sci-Fi in Fantasy or something like that, and they're constantly posting just kind of fan art, and it's like there's a movement. There are people who hunger for this stuff, you know. And in some cases, they're hungering to see themselves in a genre that is woefully, you know, lacking in those types of characters. In other cases, and I put me into this category, I want to see it because I haven't seen it, because I'm interested in it. It's different, you know. Show me, like you were saying, you know, this, you know. You know, are we going to get Denzel Washington as Magneto? Is that a good thing? Like, or should we just have a new character? Should there just be a character for Denzel, you know, that we can come up with or something like that?
Yeah, I don't... I'm completely against that, man. Like, I understand that some characters, it doesn't really make a difference with their, like, their race or whatever's being changed. For example, Spider-Man. Peter Parker should remain white. I personally believe that. Same thing with Steve Rogers. But when you make a new Captain, but Captain America itself does not have to be white. Spider-Man does not have to be white. We've seen that with Miles.
Sure, yeah.
We've seen with Miles Morales, and we've seen it with Sam Wilson. But, like, if you're gonna take, like, let's take Black Panther. He's from a country that's never been colonized. It's from a country where everyone in there is black. So yes, you will have some people from Wakanda that are light-skinned, but for the most part, it will be, they'll be all be dark-skinned with, like, big, dynamic hair. Like, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So, but then you get, like, Bobby Drake, Iceman. When they made him gay, that made sense to me. I was like, oh, considering his relationship history, his insecurities, and his, like, inability to really, like, be comfortable with himself, there had to have been, more of a, closeted personality, for the lack of a better term. And so when he came, I said, oh, this makes sense. So it's not always necessarily a bad thing, but I just wish that when franchises, excuse me, and companies made these decisions, they stopped and thought, like, are we doing this specifically for a dollar and we're just basically trying to feed on the needs of people, or are we actually doing this responsibly? Because I don't think Magneto and Xavier should be black. Like, you know what I mean? Magneto's from the Holocaust. Like, you know, he's a Holocaust survivor. And yes, that I get that there's the running debate about whether or not Malcolm X and Professor Xavier were based off of Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. It's been debated back and forth. You can get articles on both sides. But at the end of the day, these are the characters that they are. Let's just leave it. Why not create more black characters? Why not create other characters who specifically say, hey, I am this mutant, quote-unquote mutant extremist, because I believe in the teachings of Malcolm X. And then you have a pacifist one who's like, I believe that only fighting when you have to, or turning the other cheek. And I got that from Martin Luther King. Why not make these new characters instead of actually just... adding something that doesn't necessarily needed to be added or changed to these already classic characters.
Right, and it is an interesting argument, you know, and I think people get so super passionate about it and everything, but, like, I don't know, it is weird, like, you know, this, you know, Ariel's a black girl now. Okay, well, do I personally have a problem with it? No, I don't care. But does that mean I can't see the argument of people saying, like, oh, well, but she was white with red hair? And then the counter argument to that is either, well, she's a mermaid, mermaids could be anything, or, Well, but technically it was going back to Hans Christian Andersen, so, you know, whatever. It could be, his depiction didn't have red hair or anything either. But my counter to both of those is, you're missing the point, because they're not adapting any mermaid, and they're not adapting the Hans Christian Andersen bird. They're adapting Disney's Ariel. So those are like strawman arguments to me. Like, I literally don't care that Ariel's going to be black. That's cool. Like, for the, this is a lot of people happy about it. You know, on all sides. It's like plenty of people happy about it. Cool. Awesome. But I really think that the people who are like, but that's not what she looks like, I think I can't just say, oh, you're racist. Because I also agree that Steve Rogers shouldn't be a black guy. That, you know, Clark Kent shouldn't be a black guy. You know, like, I don't think so. I don't want to see a black Superman. If people want to cosplay, that's awesome. But I just don't feel like that Superman, because he's just not a black guy. No. So whatever, so make up a new character. And I love this, like, I posted about this a few months ago, and it got pretty heated. I posted a picture of Kevin Grievous's Blue Marvel.
Yes.
And like, this is a book I never read, so I'm not going to act like I'm a big fan of it. I never got to read this, but I do remember it coming out. And I remember, like, when Kevin Grievous, you know, the big giant guy from Underworld, revealed that he was, like a brilliant neuroscientist or something, or chemical biochemist or something, and he was way into comic books and was going to start his own company. It was just like, what? Okay. And so, like, he comes up with this Superman sort of kind of character. And I got to say, like, even though I've never read the book, I love the look of the character a lot. I think he's really, really cool. So,
let me tell you, I think if you actually, even doing a 5-minute, like, search on, like, Google about him, you'd love everything that they did with him. Because he is Superman-ish, but he's also a genius. He's also had to go through a lot, and because he was a he was a character in the comic book lore. He was one of the first superheroes back around the time of, I think, like the 50s and 60s.
Yeah.
And he wore a mask, and he saved the world once, and his mask came off, and everyone in the world found out that they were being saved by a black man.
Oh shit.
Yeah, so I think it was between the 50s and 70s. Imagine America freaking the fuck out, because they're like, oh, it was a black guy. You know what I mean? So the president had to say, we thank you for your services, but we can't we don't want you to continue doing this. Now imagine that, like, you're reading this, you're like, so you'd rather the world be destroyed than have it be saved by a black guy. So it was a really dope concept. It's a really deep concept, and he's completely different than Superman. He's got the super strength, sure. He's got the speed and all that, but he's also Reed Richards, Lex Luthor level genius. You know what I mean? So there's more to him than that. So I like to, again, back to the point, create new characters. I've said a million times that this woman, America Chavez, is going to be the biggest star in the Marvel Cinematic Universe once she debuts. And so it's like, yes, you created a female, Latina, lesbian character. So, like, and it's not like someone created her just to, like, fill, like to check off some boxes. She's an incredible character. And I've said this on another show, and I go, my favorite comment from her is, the laws of physics can kiss my ass.
I don't know, forgive me, I'm not getting the character. Is it Ms. Marvel? The new Ms. Marvel?
Nope. America Chavez. America Chavez is, she's gone by Miss America, but I usually just go by America Chavez. She's a completely different character. But the new Ms. Marvel is Muslim. She's Kamala Khan.
Oh, yeah. Okay. And I know people really responded to her as well.
Yeah. Because she keeps...
It was interesting they gave her stretchy powers, because, like, you know, that was always a guy thing.
Yeah.
It's like, stretchy powers are, you know, innately goofy, I think, and it's like, oh no, we can't make goofy-looking girls be stretchy or something. I don't know, like, they won't be sexy.
You know? And what I love about it is she's a Muslim woman, she's, like, always completely covered from, like, neck to foot, and she was a fangirl. So she knew that Carol Danvers was like her hero. So it was an honor for her to be able to become like Miss Marvel. It was funny. There's a cover, I'll send it to you later, where Kamala Khan is taking a selfie of her and Wolverine. And Wolverine's like grumpy, arms folded. And she's just like, oh my God, I'm teaming up with Wolverine. Like, you know what I mean? And it's like the funniest thing ever. But then as like her character progresses, she started to realize that the people she idolized are flawed. So when she started to look at Carol Danvers, who was doing something really messed up, and realized, and then also that when there's a big superhero battle, the superheroes aren't usually there for damage control. And she felt a certain way about it. And so that was one of the reasons why the champions were birthed. There was Kamala Khan, Vision's daughter, Amadeus Cho is the Hulk, Miles Morales. It was a young Cyclops for a time, but now he's back in the past and regular Cyclops exists. Riri Williams, Ironheart, and Sam Alexander's Nova. So I'm probably forgetting one person. But like their mission was a little bit different. So I like that they're taking these younger characters, and while they're still holding a legacy of the classics, they're all still different people. They're all still different personalities. Like Amadeus Cho is not Bruce Banner. Miles Morales is not Peter Parker. You know what I mean? So this was great. So you're making these characters and you're giving them all these races, and you're making like different races, different sexual preferences, different religions, and it's like, okay, you've made new characters. So what you've proven to me is that this can be done. But right. You don't. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think that's like an amazing first step, honestly, is to make like, you know, because the laziest thing would just be to recast the existing character to, you know, i.e. make Clark Kent a black guy. Like, Will Smith is now Clark Kent. Like, that's one thing. And that feels like it's a cash grab, and, you know, feels like it's done for the wrong reasons. Then you have characters that are like what you're saying. They're new characters, but they're still banking on the success of old characters. You know, we have, you know, Riri is still, you know, Ironheart. She's now the Iron Man analog, you know. So it's like, she is her own character, but whatever. Same with Miles Morales. So all these characters. So Kamala Khan, having such different powers, to me feels a little bit like even a step further than the others, because she's not, she's very different than
Captain Marvel. So it's not like Miles Morales, who has a lot of Spider-Man's powers, but with an added extra oomph, as opposed to like Kamala Khan, who's a completely different character from head to toe.
And it just made sense that, like, she's a fangirl, like you said. So, like, I didn't know any of that, but, like, you know, because my comic knowledge, like, sort of is stronger in the, like, 80s, 90s sort of era, but, like, yeah, I mean, that's all awesome, you know. And I have good friends that are, you know, still comic readers that that love the new Captain, the new Ms. Marvel, love her and can't wait for her to show up in the MCU. So I mean, that's really cool. That's really great. Yeah, but I mean they did the same sort of thing with all, you know, before they were trying to diversify race, they would try to, oh, let's make a girl character of this. Like, how many of those exist? How many She-Hulks and how many whatever? And I love She-Hulk. She's couldn't be more different than the Hulk. But, like, you know, that sort of was a whole wave. Like, the girl versions.
You know what's funny about it is now is she doesn't go by She-Hulk anymore. She's just Hulk. And she's a lot more Hulk-like now. But she's not the She-Hulk anymore. She's just Hulk. So they took the She part away from me, and I like that.
I didn't know that.
And there was a... I'll also send you this image later where... I forget her real name. Jennifer Walters was talking to her cousin Bruce about the Hulk. And Bruce, and he was saying how he wishes that he could be her. And she went on this... went on to tell him that he doesn't understand what it's like to be her, because she said... She's gotten into fights with supervillains, and they've used that as an excuse to cop a feel. Or when she changes from Jennifer Walters to the Hulk, if she has like a nip slip or something like that, there are people running around trying to get images of her naked so they can put on their blog sites and stuff like that. And it was, and Jason Aaron wrote this, and I was like, fuck, I never even really thought about that. But again, as a guy, and granted, these aren't real characters, but these are real issues that women have to go through. If you have a wardrobe malfunction, are you going to end up all over the internet? If you get in, like, if you know, if you happen to brush past some guys, you're going to try to, like, creepily cop a feel and things like that. So I also do love the fact that a lot of these, a lot of the newer writers are taking a step to acknowledge that these are real issues and real things going on top of being a little more progressive with the characters they're writing.
Right. Yeah, that's great. It's important, you know, to use your platform. You know, whatever your soapbox is, you know, use it for the right reasons. Use it for good, not for the powers of evil. And that's great, you know. And these people who, you know, want to bitch about the SJWs and stuff, it's like, you know, you're the problem, man. If you're using the term SJW and weaponizing it, it's like you're complaining about people who are trying to make things better and people who are trying to make things more inclusive and, you know, progress forward. Like, you know. Just unbelievable. Unbelievable, these people who would take something like what you just said and roll their eyes and be like, this is what's wrong with comics nowadays. Because I don't want to hear about other people's problems that are real world problems. I don't want to deal with this.
But you know what cracks me up about that is? I remember the first time someone told me what a social justice warrior, I heard the term social justice warrior. I was like, oh, that's cool. I like that. And then I thought, and I'm like, wait, that's derogatory? Like,
yeah, it's derogatory now.
Like, yeah, seriously. For lack of a better term, if like you're weaponizing social justice warrior like it's a bad thing, old man Wade says go fuck yourself.
Yeah.
Right. But hey, thank you for coming on the show. Do me a favor, plug everything, because we already know about the the amazing podcast. What would you call it again? It's very retro. How do you say it?
So I am also on an awesome podcast called Retro Redoctopus. Search for us on Facebook. Search for us on your podcast app of choice. We're on all the good podcast app, like, you know, I don't know, all the stuff, the Spotify, the iTunes, all that stuff, Stitcher, and we talk about like all geeky old stuff from the 70s, 80s, 90s, like. Comics, movies, toys, cartoons, all sorts of stuff, just anything that was like really fun that you kind of loved when you were a kid and you still remember fondly, and we say it's a celebration of all the things that made growing up awesome. So again, it's Retro Redoctopus. It's R-I-D Octopus. We kind of made up our own word. It's basically like what happens, what's more ridiculous. Okay, so it's like, what's more ridiculous than ridiculous? Well, redunculous. Well, what's more ridiculous than redunculous? Redoctopus.
It comes out every Tentacle Tuesday?
Comes out every other Tuesday. We have new episodes, and we have four hosts. We have a rotating host schedule. So every single time, you're going to hear a new dude taking charge of that particular episode, and it's fun. We have a great time. We have a great Facebook group. Our fans are, we call them Retroids, and they're just a really awesome bunch, and it's a pretty vibrant group, so we're pretty proud of it. We're just about to wrap up our first year. We're calling it season one. We started in January, so check us out if that sounds fun to you. Also, I do want to plug my other appearance as author me, which is Steve Ann Sampson. So I am going to be at Rock and Shock once again, 11th, 12th, 13th. That's in Worcester, Mass. at the DCU Center. I'm also going to be at the New England Super Mega Fest. That's at the Sheraton in Framingham, Massachusetts. And that is also where I was, they also have ScaraCon there, and that was the con I did back in June with Derek Rook and Rough House Publishing. But this particular time, I'm actually going to be with my old buddies and pals, the New England Horror Writers. So it'll be kind of a fun homecoming, and I'll be rocking out for 2 days on November 16th and 17th, and that's the New England Super Mega Fest. So, there's some fun guests that are going to be there too, and everything. I don't remember off the top of my head, but both should be good times. And you know, stop by, find me. I always do sketches if you buy from me in person, I always do sketches and sign books and free high fives, all that good stuff.
I always come for the free high fives, and I also love that when I got my two books, they were personalized, and I do have images like of the sketches he did, which was fucking amazing. And to the podcast, this is the one that really got me, and the one I always suggest to people: Castlevania / Bloody Tears Years. That one, cause I'm not a Castlevania guy, but listening to the episode, I was like, fuck, maybe I should get into this the Netflix show, and like not knowing that there was no real dialogue or anything like that. But I also hearken back to remembering my cousin play this game, and I was just like, oh, I remember this, I remember that, you know what I mean? So, and as you said, the Facebook group is super fun. It's just a bunch of really good people who just post a bunch of like old stuff. And it's also kind of cool when you post something and someone goes, oh, I remember this. Like, I didn't think anybody would remember the Fantastic Max cartoon or the Bedrock Kid song that was stuck in my head. I'm like, yes. And then someone posted Mr. Bogus, and I was like, oh, I was going to post that. But like, it's kind of cool. And it's really fun that like everybody on there is just really just there to be old people in our own selves and just kind of enjoy nostalgia. And like you said, the things that made growing up awesome.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that so much. Yeah, that's awesome. I love when you posted the Fantastic Max theme. I hadn't thought about that cartoon in years. Not Mighty Max, Fantastic Max, yes. For those who think they were talking about the wrong thing. It was a baby who had, like, space adventures. It was so weird, but I remember that show. I liked it. But, yeah, I mean, like, that's sort of what it turns into is, like, everybody's posting their own experiences and things that they remember, and it really does... It does turn into a pretty good time. So anyway, but thanks for the Castlevania episode. Actually, was our second episode ever.
Yep.
So that's going all the way back to like January. But it's really funny you mentioned that one, because that one is still our highest listen count ever.
Really?
Like one of the episodes, and it's not like the other ones, because the other ones are like, you know, we've slowly been increasing in listenership as we've gone, except for that episode. I think new people look down the list of our episodes and they're like cherry picking, and then they're like, oh, Castlevania, and they listen to that one too, because that one just keeps ticking up, and it has like, I mean, almost twice as many as, it has more than twice as many as many other episodes.
So let me go, I'll go down the list, because it's only 18 episodes, and I'll end it up, you can say our goodbyes after this. But so we have Maiden Voyage, Childhood's End, Durance, Castlevania, Bloody Tears for Years, Party of One, Awesome Movies That Get No Love, which was a good one. Transformers, More Than Meets These Guys. A Time Before Stuff, Lost Board Games, Collecting Dust, Star Trek, Where No Podcast Has Gone Before, Pac-Man Feverish, Girl Cartoon Showdown, which was fucking great. I love that one. Godzilla Gaming, Start to End, Video Games That Should Have Been, Mantle of the Batman, and that was the 30-year anniversary of the Michael Keaton one?
Yes.
The Weirdest of Them All. Oh, excuse me, The Weirdest of Them Al with Randy Carter.
Yes, there
you go. Cartoon Comeback, TV Intros, Themes from a Memory, Sporting Entertainment, Tears in the Rain, A Tribute to Rutger Hauer. So,
our new episode drops in a couple days, so I don't know when this episode we're recording right now is going to drop, but our new one is coming out in a couple days out, and that's that is going to be on the video game series Contra.
Oh, man. It's funny. Not only do I remember Contra, I remember the first two and the one on Sega Genesis where they threw in, like, this random robot and a guy with a wolf face.
Dude, you know what we talk about this. So, you know what the werewolf's name is?
Oh, God, what?
His name is... the funniest name. He's like the most 90s character ever. First of all, let me paint the picture first. He's a werewolf with sunglasses and no shirt and jeans, and he has two robot arms, one of which is like a minigun. Right? Yeah. Like a Gatling gun. Okay? His name is Brad Fangs.
Brad Fangs?
It's either Fangs or Fang, but his name is Brad. It's like Brad Fang or something. And the little robot's name is Brownie.
Is like, what?
What? Brownie. What a shitty name for a robot.
Yeah, it's Brad Fang. Oh my God.
Brad Fang and Brownie. good stuff.
Oh, God. Steve, thank you for doing this, man. This is fucking great. Don't forget, I'll make sure I plug all the stuff. I'm going to try to get to Rock and Shock, but seeing as how I don't drive, you know. But I will...
thanks a lot, man. It was a pleasure as always. I love coming on. Hope to see you soon, man.
Absolutely, man. Until then, I don't know. Damn it, wait, I guess?
Until then...
Greetings! We are the Retro Redoctopus Cephala Podcast, a bi-weekly show that celebrates all the things that made growing up awesome.
He's right. We wax philosophic about lots of geeky crap like old video games and movies, toys, cartoons, I don't know, help me out here.
Music. Pants.
Quoting video games that don't have dialogues.
Shabibers.
Tasty news.
Unnecessarily long Japanese onomatopoeia.
Butt breathers.
Uncomfortable nature facts.
Or how to install a samoplange.
And unlike all those other podcasts, we at Retro Redoctopus have an exciting rotating host schedule.
Do we?
We sure do.
So, if you didn't like the guy flapping his gums this week,
like me,
worry not, gentle listener. Next week, we'll have a whole new host.
Of problems.
Hey, they might still suck, but they'll suck differently.
And you know what's really cool? Retro Redoctopus is part of the Inebriard Podcast Network, with new episodes out every Tentacle Tuesday.
Which is like every other Tuesday. We named it.
Anyways, you can listen to us at iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, or straight from the tab, redoctopus.buzzsprout.com.
Damn it, Wade!